TFM.
Welcome back, everyone, to Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I brought us some Vidalin cigars today, which should make this a good show because, like Mbenga said, those Vidalins really know how to record a podcast. I mean, throw a party. I'm sorry. Maybe this isn't the best idea.
Oh, Chris. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's going to be worth the headache. They really do make the best cigars. And so I've got a little whiskey here to go with that. And man,
I thought it would go well together.
Seriously, yeah. It's time to party, my friend. It's time to party. And as we learned in this episode, I think the greatest thing we learned in this episode, right? Mbenga and Pike know how to party.
Yeah. Party with the dead. Or the living dead, anyway. I thought the Vidalin reference in here was interesting because that comes from the animated series. There's an episode called The Jihad. And one of the things about the Vidalins is that they're supposed to have the ability to cure people of madness. And it's given what's going on with Batel and what this residual Gorn DNA is doing to her, and then the plot of the episode to go get the Chimera Blossom to try to heal her. I don't know if that was an intentional connection that the writers made, but it seems like it might be a very subtle one.
You know, all I could think of watching this entire episode was that quote from Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, where Sirius is like, you would know all about the madness within, wouldn't you, Remus? And it's like, of course, you know, reference to the fact that he's a werewolf. And that's all I could think of is that, you would know all about the madness within, wouldn't you, Batel?
Yeah. They should do an episode where, they have to fight werewolves instead of zombies. We'll just make it like a monster every season with the show.
Yeah, I mean, you could cross over with all the, specific monsters of the famous, Monsterverse from back in the day. So, why not?
Although, given Strange New Worlds, it'll probably be Teen Wolf that they tie into.
It'll be some sort of like strange claymation episode for some reason. Just cause. Why not? We haven't tried that yet. So
it'll be the were-rabbit from Wallace and Gromit.
That's exactly what it would be. That's why it's in claymation. There you go.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
All right, everyone, we're going to continue season 3 of Strange New Worlds today with episode 3, Shuttle to Kenfori, and here is a quick rundown of the story. With Captain Batel facing the possibility of becoming an extra in the 1980s miniseries V, Dr. Mbenga and Mr. Spock hatch a plan, no pun intended, to save her by using a rare Chimera Blossom to combine the residual Gorn DNA in her body with her human DNA. The catch? That very special episode of Blossom only airs in one place, a planet once disputed by the Federation and Klingons. Captain Pike, wanting to play a role in saving his girlfriend, kicks Spock off the mission and assigns himself to accompany Mbenga. When they arrive on Kenfori, they find themselves in an episode of The Walking Dead. But escaping the zombies won't be as easy as they think, thanks to the arrival of Bytha, daughter of Klingon ambassador / mass murderer Dahra, who is determined to exact vengeance on Mbenga. So, Matthew, this episode is, they should have called it Dahra Part 2, because the story follows up on Season 2's Under the Cloak of War, where we see the Klingon ambassador Dahra, who Mbenga kills in sick bay. And I was thinking as I was watching it that it feels like it's been ages since that happened because of the long break between seasons, but actually it was only 6 episodes ago. So if you put that in the context of a traditional Star Trek season, it would have been a pretty quick follow-up to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is really interesting. And it's actually one of the things I would say is one of the best parts of the episode is that we actually follow that up. You know, the whole idea of Mbenga kind of thinking he basically got away with that and that he would never have to confess this as captain. Nobody else would ever find out. I thought that was great. And of course, you know, with what we know of Klingons, to get a little bit more background to that character and what his actions had also done to his own family, I thought made a lot of sense. So all of that was incredibly well written and really well done. And it's one of those places where, you know, Deep Space Nine, right, we've talked about that so often and how good it was at following up threads that it had created for itself. And this is a place here where, strangely enough, pun intended, Strange New Worlds finally decides to do the same thing. I mean, you know, how long have we been waiting for Cybok? You know?
Yeah, what?
You know, like,
my wife and I are rewatching season one right now, and we just passed the whole Cybok thing. And again, I'm like, what are they going to do with Cybok? just put that out there.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, in the end, are they going to do anything with it? Because it seems as though they've completely forgotten that that existed as a storyline. And so, again, to follow this up is wonderful, because that was always kind of a hanging thread storyline wise that I think did need to be followed up. And now, you know, you create a good conclusion to that. So if you were, you know, binging the series, this makes a wonderful counterpart to that just six episodes later, where we finally see kind of the resolution for Mbenga and for, you know, the Dokra family as well. And what I also appreciate about that is just, you know, this whole episode, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, I think probably a little later, but is really kind of about building three main characters in the series, which is it's about building Pike, it's about building Mbenga, and it's about continuing the story with Ortegas, right? With minor story points with Batel. And so I think that is one of the things that's really a strength of this episode, is it knows the characters it's looking to inform. And I think it works diligently to make sure that all of the story points kind of reflect and mirror those stories. And I think, yeah, they did a really good job. So what did you think about it, Chris?
Yeah, well, they're able to do what you're saying with these three characters within the same story. Right. So you don't have sometimes on Star Trek, you'll have the A story and the B story, and they'll both be building characters, but the stories are not related. Whereas here, they're able to do all of this in one story where everyone is involved in the mission. So that works well. Yeah, I think it's a good episode. I'll go ahead and spoil that at the beginning, that I think it's a good episode. It's the kind of story that I think they really should be telling from week to week.
Agreed.
Because they don't have, again, going back to Wedding Bell Blues, I really enjoyed that episode. And it's an episode that I will probably rewatch from time to time. But when you only have 10 slots to work with, I think that this is the type of story that is most effective for the show and for Star Trek. Now, moving into the next thing that we have on our outline here, The Walking Dead, I will say that one thing that I'm not crazy about for this story, and it's my personal taste, is that I don't like zombies. And I don't like scary movies, and I don't like zombie movies or TV shows or anything like that. So the zombies for me are, I think they work for some aspects of the story, but I also think that maybe they go a little bit overboard with the action sequences with the zombies, because I know that it's a very popular genre on TV. I know there are many people who really love this, who really love zombies and zombie stories. And so I get it. How did you feel about that, though? Do you feel like it detracted from the story at any point, or did it create the right atmosphere for the story given what was going on, and also with the face-off between M'Benga and Bytha.
The interesting part about this is the science that's being done behind this is very interesting. I was teasing before we started recording this kind of felt like gain of function herbology, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to, you know, take seed and make it more durable and easier to grow food in any environment, right? And something you had mentioned as we were talking too is like the idea of the triticale, you know, quadriticale.
Yeah. Well, I wondered, the reason that I thought that is that Pike has this little quip where he just says, oh, that would be very helpful, or that would be very useful, something like that. And so it just made me think about the whole quadro triticale.
And it would be, right? I mean, so, but as you mentioned, right, the whole thought process that then this creates zombies. Look, it's not terrible, but it also reminds me very much of something we've seen before in Enterprise with Impulse, which basically this episode somewhat felt like a reworking of that episode, which is, you know, we need a substance, we run into this ship, and we find out something has gone really wrong with these characters. They've basically been turned into zombies, and we also find out that this substance can really wreck people if we're not careful. So, you know, you gotta check yourself before you trek yourself, you know. And
sounds like a sign that's hanging at Star Trek Las Vegas before you go in.
Probably. So, it's not terrible, but I think the problem with it is, honestly, it just does feel like it has been done before in Star Trek.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, logically, the idea that there's like nothing living on this planet doesn't actually make any sense, I don't think, because like, what about bug life and like all of that type of stuff? Like, there would be types of life that I don't think would be affected by this virus.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe the implication there is that the zombies have eaten everything, eaten all the animals.
Maybe.
All the bugs on the planet. Guessing.
I feel like that doesn't make a lot of sense. Again, you know, if a cockroach could survive a nuclear blast survive, you know, what supposedly is eons worth of evolution, I don't really think. Anyway, so there were just things like that where as I'm watching the episode, I'm a little bit pulled out because it's not quite connecting the thought process, and it's not quite engaging enough of an episode because we go to zombies for me to actually stop my questioning and just get invested in the episode, because I'm like, okay, I feel like this isn't, I've seen this before, you know, and really the stuff that saves this episode is the interpersonal stuff. You know, again, between Dokra's daughter and M'Benga and all that. But the actual plot stuff on the planet is not their best work, if you ask me.
Yeah. Could you imagine zombie cockroaches?
Dude, Chris, I can't tell you how much I hate cockroaches, being somebody who grew up in Texas. So, no, I can't. I don't ever want to think about that again.
Yeah. In Texas, do you have the big, like, hissing cockroaches that they have in New Orleans?
We got all kinds of cockroaches. We even have ones that fly.
Yeah, we had those in Alabama as well.
It's Chris. It's the worst.
It's the worst, yeah. So I guess your answer is that the zombies work a little bit, but yes, they do kind of distract from the overall story, which is how I feel. Yeah.
They work a little bit, but it's not the most engaging choice that you could make. Mm.
Right. So about the there's only flora, there's no fauna, I think that it did seem odd to me at first, for sure. It does feel like something that might have been part of a story on the original series, though, where I could see them going down to a planet and Kirk and Spock and Bones are walking around and they're scanning, and Spock says, "You, Captain, I'm not detecting any fauna on this planet." So that's a case where I think that Strange New Worlds, I hope it's somewhat intentional. It might be subconscious for the writers. I don't know. But I feel like they capture the spirit of the original series in this way, in their stories.
Well, at least in this episode, yes. I felt like this felt much more like one of those type of episodes for the most part.
It's sort of like a modern take on the style of an original series episode, I could say. As far as the zombies go and comparing it with Impulse, I almost think that this one might make a little more sense than Impulse, because in Impulse you've got Trillium D, so you've got this substance that somehow turns the Vulcans into zombies, I think by driving them mad. Whereas here, this moss, at least it is also biological, and it gets into the people, and the moss is designed, as Mbinga explains, to basically devour all the other plant life. And once it gets inside the people, it takes over their bodies, and then they want to devour everything as well. So now they're devouring people. I'm not saying scientifically it is accurate, but at least there's a biological thread running through the whole premise.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea, you know, that you would be doing this type of research again, and you know, I think what's fascinating is this seems very much like they were drawing from very recent events in our world. The idea of something escaping from a lab because an accident happens. And of course here it's war that happens. And, and that releases this. And, you know, as Mbanga talks about, when you're dealing with these type of plants and stuff, you never know exactly what it is that can be dangerous until you do the study. And so, you know, I thought, you know, that was, you know, again, that's all stuff that feels really well done on that. You know, I think you're right, though, in pinpointing that one of the things that kind of happens in the episode is that the action sequences and stuff with the zombies do become too much of a focal point. More so than the really important stuff, which is the story of the specifically these three characters plus Batel. And the other part about this too is that these zombies, you know, in Impulse, the zombies represent the antithesis of everything that Vulcans are, right? Which are controlled and all of that kind of thing. Whereas these zombies don't represent any of that. You know, it's just zombies.
Yeah, they're just monsters.
Exactly. Yeah. And so therefore, I think that's a place where the writing is also kind of letting us down just a little bit in that is that the thing that they are turned into doesn't represent enough a juxtaposition for our characters, except for possibly, maybe I'm talking myself into this, but I mean, the whole idea of that, you know, Batel, they are wanting to merge what is in her that is Gorn with her humanity, and they're not quite sure what she's going to turn into. And so maybe that's where they're trying to connect.
Well, I think that's one connection. And the other thing that I might make is that when Mbanga is fighting Bytha and they're under this kind of protective dome of a force field and you've got all the zombies surrounding them, the fact that Mbanga is talking about the monster inside of him and then sometimes that monster is needed and sometimes that monster comes out. You do have the literal visual representation of the monster surrounding them. So it reinforces that idea a little bit as well. I come back to the idea that they could tell the same story without all the zombies around. And so that's where it starts to feel like, okay, we've got to play up on a genre that's very popular and like ratchet up the horror element and the action element by putting them in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the other thing is that if you had found something else to have as this representation that wasn't something that you had have already done before, I think that would also have been helpful. And so, yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's where the claymation comes in.
please stop speaking that into existence. The last thing we need is for the writers of Strange New Worlds to hear one more dumb idea that they should try. We've already had animation. The last thing we need, and we're about to get puppets. We don't need claymation.
Yeah, right.
So.
Right.
No more
right.
gimmicks.
But you have to admit that the animated crossover of Lower Decks actually was a good episode. Somehow they made it work. But I think it worked because they were tying it into another Star Trek series and they could bring the characters over in real life.
It was amusing.
Yeah, it was amusing. All right. Well, let's talk about Klingons. We're already talking about Klingons, but one thing I love in this episode is that they're crafting proper Klingons again. And I don't want to go off on a whole huge rant about the Klingons in Discovery and what they did.
Please do. I mean, I rant enough. I think it's your turn.
What I will say here is that, and this isn't the first time, so this is the third time that we've seen Klingons in Strange New Worlds. The first was in The Broken Circle, and then the second time was in Under the Cloak of War, which is the episode that this is a follow-up to with Dahra. And each time, they have given us Klingons that look like the familiar Klingons that we've known ever since the motion picture. And in this case, I think they do a particularly good job of everything from the uniform design of the Klingons. Of course, the battle cruiser looks amazing. It's a CGI model, but it looks great. I think that the presentation of the Klingons here is all done really well. The one thing that I'm not a huge fan of is that even though the battle cruiser looks amazing, they have this little Klingon raider, which appeared in Discovery, that doesn't look anything like a Klingon ship. I guess they're doing that to try to tie that ship from Discovery into broader Star Trek to say, well, you know, yeah, it doesn't look anything like a Klingon ship, but here's the battle cruiser. So this is just another craft that you never saw before. And that's fine. I mean, you could explain things that way. What they did do here is that we get a better view of it than we did in Discovery. And whereas you have a Klingon bird of prey based on a bird, this thing looks to be based on an insect. It almost looks like some kind of dragonfly. It's not exactly a dragonfly, but some kind of similar insect when it comes down. So at least there was an effort to tie it into the ship design reflecting something from nature, the way a bird of prey would. But overall, I think what they're doing with the Klingons here, I really like it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't have too many complaints about the Klingons. I think, you know, it's great that this is in a alternate universe, so I don't have to care about continuity. I agree with you in the sense that I don't like that this insectoid, you know, looking like ship, because mm-hmm. it doesn't make any sense for Klingons when everything is based off of birds of prey,
right.
You know, that type of feeling. And so I don't think that works. But I think what does work is just the fact that they have these Klingons that look and feel much more like the Klingons. Even their costuming kind of has a TOS type feel to it, but modern.
Yeah, exactly.
The only thing I would that I can't stand is the fact that we decide we need them to speak in Klingon unless they're speaking with human beings. And it's just like, guys, I don't need to read subtitles in this show. I can in my brain know that when they're mm-hmm. talking to one another, they're speaking Klingon. I don't actually need them to speak Klingon. It doesn't make it cooler. At least it didn't take 45 minutes to get through 3 minutes of dialogue like it did in Discovery.
Well, yeah, the Discovery thing was, and they moved away from that fairly quickly because they realized that
which is great.
Doesn't work.
But right? I was a little frustrated that they've still felt the need to have them speak everything in Klingon.
Yeah.
For the most part, because I don't need that. But again, it's not terrible. It's just like a little nitpick, right? I'm not going to get all up in arms about it. So
I think
they did a really good job for the most part with the Klingon look and feel that they've had in this show. And and you're right. It does feel more in line with the Klingons that we've known and loved in the original series, and then on through TNG, it seems to fit mm-hmm. more.
Yeah. So. Well, like you mentioned, the uniform design feels like a modern take on the TOS Klingon uniforms, as opposed to just using the next generation DS9 era Klingon uniforms, which I thought was nice.
Yeah, there's just ways in which you can almost see, you know, you'd have those baldricks that mm-hmm. they would wear and how cheesy mm-hmm. they would look and everything. And yeah, it just felt good. So I think they did actually a pretty good job. I can't complain too much. You know, well done on their part to give fans something that makes more sense.
About the Klingon language, though, I kind of like it as long as they're not saying anything really important. Like on Discovery at the beginning of that series, everything that was being said was critical for you understanding the whole setup of the story, and you had to follow through this like plotting Klingon and read subtitles. But in a situation like this where, you know, they're kind of talking to each other a little bit, and if I don't know what they're saying, it doesn't really affect the story too much, which was the case here, actually, because our subtitles were in Japanese, and I didn't bother mm-hmm. reading them. I just, like, they're talking to each other in Klingon for a minute, so I think it adds a little bit to the atmosphere, and it is realistic because if you were there with Pike and Mbenga, that's what you would be hearing. And I suspect Mbenga speaks Klingon, but I don't think Pike does, just based on what we know so mm-hmm. far.
Yeah.
So I think it adds a little bit of realism to the situation, actually.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm not saying that it's the worst thing ever. It's just, it feels, you know, there were not a ton of times in Star Trek in general where we spent a lot of time listening to, you know, they would very quickly would transition, you know, mm-hmm. If they did do that. And so, but anyway, what's nice is that for the most part, it does seem like they have kind of gone back to the Klingons that we knew and loved for mm-hmm. the most part. And again, this story with Dokra's daughter really honors a lot of the things that we have learned about Klingons from the Prime universe. And in that, I have to give them credit for doing that. So that was really well done in that sense.
Well, switching gears to another topic, at some point, I think Batel is going to tell Pike, "I was born to be with you." Because I want to know if you think, are they really going to make Batel a human Gorn hybrid? The producers have said that they aren't done with the Gorn yet. And so I just wonder if this and Ortega's trauma is how they're going to keep the Gorn in the mix. And also, how long are they going to keep doing it?
Okay. Just bear with me, but this is my wild off-the-wall theory. But Batel becomes the basis for the Gorn that we see in Arena mm-hmm. because she's much more bipedal humanoid.
Yeah.
And she becomes like that and then helps create the Gorn that we know.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to happen.
What if Batel is the Gorn from Arena? And there's that line that got cut where she tells Kirk, like, you know, I used to
when
date
she tells Kirk, your,
yeah. I used to date the guy that's now in the chair.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting choice, right? Because I don't quite understand exactly where this is going to go with Batel. And I get the interesting aspect of building the character. And what this does so well, I think, was just we allow Batel and Pike to have a very adult conversation about their relationship and dealing with the reality of their relationship and who they are as people. You know, when she discusses this with him and she says, I know you and I know what you would have done. And in the end, he has to agree with her because that's exactly what he would have done.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
And it would not have made this easier for her. And so, especially when she has one chance to live, right? There are no other chances. And so she doesn't really necessarily have a choice unless she's just willing to die.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that was great. As to how this is going to play in with the idea of the Gorn, whether or not, I don't know. I kind of feel like, look, if they do a thing where Batel becomes somebody that can kind of like help them bridge the gap between humanity and the Gorn, that seems terrible as an idea because, you know, luckily we don't have to worry about canon, but if we did, that would fly in the face of canon, right? Because when we first meet the Gorn in Arena, there are species we don't really know or know anything about and have no real true knowledge of and don't know what to do with. And so that would really hurt that. And I think that would be a kind of a just it would be a really cheesy, terrible type of story for them to try and do. So I honestly don't know. I'm really in this place where until I kind of see more of the story, I really have no idea how to feel about that. So I don't know. What do you think about it?
Well, I think you should stop giving them ideas because I don't think that they've thought about that. But now that they're going to hear you talk about it, they might
puppets,
be.
Puppets, and we gave them claymation now.
Great
and
idea.
This, oh my gosh. We should just shut up, Chris. Because we know they all listen to this show.
I mean,
this is Kurtzman's favorite, you know, podcast.
I was just trying to think back. Was there like a little, like a dinosaur hand puppet on Lamb Chop? Because, I mean, now there's an idea.
Oh, please don't give us a hand puppet
episode. I can't wait until season 5 when they use one of the 6 episodes that they have for the Lamb Chop episode.
Oh, jeez. Oh, geez.
I'm picturing, you know, like a green puppet with little red spikes on its back. I mean, it's going to be perfect. So, I don't know what they're doing with this either. I almost feel like the whole Batel character at this point is just there so that they can build Pike's character, so they can put Pike in situations that allow him to be what we saw at the end of this episode, where he's upset that she didn't tell him. He wants to help, but in the end, he understands. And what's most important to him is taking care of her. And you see that with him and Mbenga as well. You know, the most important thing to him is Mbenga is his friend. And he can think beyond Starfleet protocol and he can actually see people for who they are and connect with them on a human level as friends, which I think is one thing that makes Pike such a good captain and and is the reason we have the show in the first place, because that part of his character, thanks to how Anson Mount played the character, came out in Discovery and made everyone want the show in the first place. And so it feels a bit like the storyline with Batel and the residual Gorn DNA is there for that reason, to set up stories like the one that we got in this episode. I find it difficult to imagine that they would actually have Batel turn into or evolve into some sort of human Gorn hybrid. I don't know what you would do with the character. all jokes aside, what we were just talking about, I don't know what you would do with the character if you created that character. I think that if they were going to tell a really serious story, I think the most likely outcome to all of this is that Batel dies. But I don't think on this show that they're likely to kill Pike's girlfriend. So,
yeah, I mean,
I don't really know where they're going to go with this.
I'm wondering if this is kind of more of a story about the idea of, you know, where to bend the rules on, say, genetic engineering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be. Yeah.
So, and in that, I think that's more of a Star Trek story, and it's more of an interesting kind of story. You know, again, this whole mission is something that's completely off the books. And so everything that's happening here, from what they're going to try with Batel to keep her alive in the first place, is stuff that is outlawed by the Federation. And we've played with this a little bit in Strange New Worlds. And so for them to continue to do that, I think that's the storyline that's maybe more interesting, because it plays along with the idea of what we did with the number one story in the Illyrians. Yeah. And so that's where I think this is kind of a more interesting type of story. As per Ortegas and building that character, and I mean, I was really disappointed with the way in which they handled this, because nobody in a chain of command would let an officer get away with what she does. They would immediately been you know, sent off the bridge, you know, with that kind of attitude, because she does this twice, once in a meeting with the senior staff, and then second on the bridge. And so I did not really appreciate that, as much as I didn't appreciate number one's hair, which was the worst. It was legitimately the worst wig I've ever seen a character wear.
I don't know what was going on with the costume design.
There was way too much of kind of the Discovery style writing, where we're so worried about people's feelings that we can't actually deal with the reality of the situation, that we're in an organization where the chain of command is incredibly important. We're going to allow people to be insubordinate and basically get away with it. You know, Ortegas gets a slap on the wrist, basically. I just felt like this needed to be, this is the part of the episode that I felt like really needed to go back to the drawing board and find a way, I think, to write it, I guess, more realistically. You know, my wife was in the Army. You would never talk to your superior officer like this, ever.
Right. Yeah. So I cannot speak to that kind of chain command from a military standpoint, because I was never in the military, but just looking at how the Enterprise functions, I think that there's this very relaxed kind of family nature to it, even though they are in a military structure. And it felt to me, just as a viewer, like that atmosphere can lead to a situation like this, where Ortegas feels comfortable enough to speak up in a meeting and say, hey,
right, exactly,
that's a crazy plan. And then to actually disobey orders on the bridge and allow the Klingons to see them. I can imagine, in the heat of the moment, I can see number one against his TV show. I can see number one not immediately kicking her off the bridge because of the situation that they were in, and who else is going to take over for Ortegas and actually fly the ship and get them out of that situation. And so she allowed it to go on. And then after they were safe, then she had the meeting with Ortegas. But like you say, I would expect the consequences for what Ortegas did to be much harsher than what we see. And that's where the kind of the friendly family nature of the ship and the command crew comes into play again, where Una's like, okay, I have to punish you, but it's not going to be too bad. Like, I think 2 weeks off the duty roster and going to chain of command class, like you say, that sounds very much like a slap on the wrist for insubordination and endangering everyone on the ship. So that moment of it, I think, could have been handled a lot better. I think back to Voyager, you know, Tom Paris does something and Janeway throws him in the brig for 30 days.
Yes, right? We were absolutely talking about this, you know.
Yeah, and he's also the one who flies the ship, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, and so arguably better than Ortegas, but, you know, that's a whole other story. You know, look, what you said was incredibly salient to this argument, which is if you run a ship where the rules are so relaxed, then people are going to feel the ability to then do whatever they want, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly, I think you nailed that that's why Ortegas does this. She feels that she has the right to be able to do this. And what's interesting about that, again, if you look at, there's only one captain who has somebody do that to them, and that captain is Sisko. Mm-hmm. And it's because Kira is his first officer, and she's not human. And so, therefore, those interactions, as you notice throughout the years, they get more and more copacetic, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only other person who could get away with that is Bones with Kirk. But that's because he's also the chief medical officer, and therefore his opinion can override the captain's if ever need be, you know, when it comes to medical things. So, yeah, this type of subordinate to the second in command of the ship just could not and would not and ever happen. It's interesting because my personal opinion is that Discovery, you know, I watched a bit of Discovery and then moving into this show, these two shows specifically lean very heavily into the type of writing that you would see in a YA novel. With the way we deal about characters' feelings, the way the characters speak to one another, you know, all that kind of stuff. And Star Trek, traditionally, has always kind of been more based off of like a Shakespearean type of play.
Yeah. It's more timeless. And what we get in these two shows is very much a reflection of the times. It's a reflection of part of the culture these days anyway.
And if you... my personal opinion is that's what's hurting this show specifically. It's definitely what hurt Discovery, but it's also hurting this show. And part of that is because I feel as though this third season is leaning so heavily into that, that it is doing a disservice to these characters because this is set in the TOS time period with Pike. The show really deserves the ability for it to be timeless and to feel like the other Star Trek series. And yet I'm worried that, you know, it's going to be a show like Discovery that in all intents and purposes is probably forgotten because people are going to still watch. I mean, a friend of mine was just introducing his child to who is very young to TOS. And she's loving it.
Yeah.
That show's 50 years old.
Yeah.
Basically, you know? And so, and I'm, you know, I'm showing my wife TNG and we're in the sixth season and she's really enjoying it because there's a timeless nature to the show. I mean, she enjoyed Enterprise the same way too, you know? So,
yeah.
And she's seen a bunch of TOS and all the TOS movies. So it's like, I think that's it's something that's going to be interesting to kind of track throughout the years to see kind of what lasts from the Paramount Plus era, basically.
Yeah. Well,
because the only thing that feels kind of like something that is akin to what we would think might last is honestly Picard season 3 And mm-hmm. and that's because it mirrors more the Star Trek we all knew and loved.
Right. Well, and also it's a moment of nostalgia for us all to see them back together.
Right. Which, yeah. you know, it. But in some ways, it's not just the nostalgia, but it's also the connected storytelling. And there are some modernizations to it that mm-hmm. they probably could have pulled back a little bit. But at the same time, it leans more heavily into the Shakespearean type of storytelling.
Sure, yeah.
Of like when you think about comedy and drama in that traditional sense, mm-hmm. that makes it work,
yeah.
I think, better. But anyway.
Did they, in season three of Picard, did they ever say, "You got this"? Because that is one of the things that they put in scripts these days. It's so in the moment for me. I think that, you know, 20 years from now, that's going to be a phrase people are going to, it's going to like seriously date every episode that has that phrase in there. Get used a yeah. lot.
Well, and that's the thing that, you know, modern parlance, whenever you're writing, is there's going to be pieces of that in anything you write. But again, the best of Star Trek has leaned into the use of the English language that has turned out to be timeless.
Yeah.
And again, it's because it's based off of these traditional dramatic and comedic works that have become timeless in the sense that they've lasted for hundreds of years
mm-hmm.
Already. And then when they don't do that, I mean, and that was the, right, that was the thing with Enterprise. One of the things that made that work was that we were trying to portray humanity that was closer to us on purpose.
On purpose, yeah.
You right. know, and that felt more like that they would still have vestiges of the type of thought processes and language that we use mm-hmm. today because yeah, exactly. they were much closer to that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
anyway, it's a well, really interesting conversation, and I do think it'll be really interesting for Star Trek fans, you know, over the next, you know, 10, 20 years to kind of see how these things age and mm-hmm. if they have longevity.
Yeah. Yeah. It is an interesting conversation. Maybe one we should do as a dedicated episode on a different podcast and we can
yeah.
kind of delve into that. I will say just last comment on that about words. You know, I'm a writer and an editor, so I have to really carefully check and craft language and all. And there's a reason why words and phrases and idioms take a long time to get into the dictionary. It's why there will be words that everyone uses today, but if you go look it up in the dictionary, it's not going to be in there because dictionaries, they wait for language to settle and see right. if that's actually going to yeah, be yeah. part of the language before it becomes an official part yep, of agreed. Their listings. And I yep. think that's what you see reflected in some of the language and writing
right.
For shows like this, which really traditionally have been more timeless in their nature. Okay, well, so wrapping up, shuttle to Ken Forey. Any final thoughts on this episode and this story, and what's your rating on this one?
I think... To bring this full circle, one of the things that you said earlier is that you believed that this should be the type of story that this series was doing more of. One of the things that we've you know talked about on the other side of Pike's Quarters, because they're so vast,
they are really fast.
when you have 10 episodes a season or 8 mm-hmm. episodes a season, right? The percentage of episodes that should be comedy to, I guess, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be more serious, but more character and story based.
Mm-hmm.
That really should be 90-10, 80-20 at most. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because you only have so many episodes to tell the stories of these characters and move that story along where you want it to go, because you're doing this this connected storytelling, right? You know, you're doing this syndicated storytelling. And it was much easier to do that when you had, I mean, when you look at Trek throughout the Golden Age, TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and then even through Enterprise, right? Those shows would have like 24 to 26 episodes a season. And the amount of actual, like, quote unquote, comedy episodes in those was still like 80-20.
Yeah, at the most. Yeah.
And nobody complained about that. So I think that that's one of the things that I really appreciate this episode. We connected with a previous episode. We followed up on the storyline there from Under the Cloak of War with M'Benga. Thought that was great. I really enjoy his character, and I loved the interaction between him and Pike. I thought that was wonderful. I thought they did a great job of building that relationship between those two and showing us how close those two are. And in many ways, you know, M'Benga is like his bones, where M'Benga can kind of say anything to him. Vice versa, which I loved. And it's what this episode made me want more of is more of this, where these characters are truly being seen together, digging into one another's lives and really influencing one another. And we're telling stories about their lives that allow us to do that. Unfortunately, you know, the next episode we're going to get is a holodeck episode. Don't get me started.
Let's see. Let's just wait and see what they do.
And
with
so,
it.
But I know that it's most likely going to be kind of another humorous episode. And I'm just like, guys, we only have so many episodes this season. Yeah, you know. So, in that, what I'm all that to say, I'm using that to praise this episode. Mm-hmm. This is the type of storytelling that I personally want from this series. It's also where I think the series shines more brightly is when we do this type of storytelling.
Yeah, right.
And so for me, I'm going to give this 4 out of 5 hidden Gorns in Batel.
Oh, wow. Because it's going to be hard to find.
Yeah. The madness within is something I have a hard time controlling, Chris. But this was a much stronger episode of this season. And I hope and pray that more of this season feels like this, because this really was a much more enjoyable experience for me. And part of it is because I do like these characters. I do like these actors. And what I want for them is to be challenged dramatically to help me dig into who they are as characters. So, yeah, 4 out of 5 for me. What about you?
Right. Yeah, you said that this is where the series shines its brightest. And I mentioned that this is the type of stuff that they should be doing, because the genesis of this show in the first place is from the second season of Discovery, from a very serious storyline where you had Pike and Spock and Una in serious roles. And if you look at the beginning of this series, like the first 6 episodes, Strange New Worlds, it was a great episode.
It
perfect premise of what Star Trek was from the very start. Children of the Comet, Ghosts of Illyria, Memento Mori, and then the 6th one, Lift Us Up Where Suffering Cannot Reach. Again, very serious material, very true to Star Trek. The only one in that first 6 that was humorous was Spock Amok, which I actually think was a really fun episode and really well done. And it was a nice little way to break up an otherwise mostly serious serious season in general, and certainly to the start of the season. And they did the same thing in season 2, where they opened with the Broken Circle and Ad Astra per Aspera. And they've kind of gotten away from that more and more. And I think that the reason the show was so wanted by the fans and so popular at the beginning is because the stories were so nicely tied into the premise of Star Trek. So that's why I said that. But yeah, I enjoyed this episode quite a lot. One thing we didn't talk about at all that I just wanted to mention that also I thought was really nicely done in this episode was the music. So the music, there are quite a few moments in here that really feel like Star Trek VI. So there's that moment where the Enterprise...
It would help if we got soundtracks for this show, Chris.
Well, I'm sure we probably eventually will, but I don't know
when
that's going to happen.
We only have one so far.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they'll get around to it eventually, you know, after they do the puppet stuff and all that. But anyway, when the Enterprise detects the Eon flux and the neutrino emissions, the music is very reminiscent of Star Trek VI. And also when the Klingons enter the research facility, it feels a lot like when the Assassins board Kronos One in Star Trek VI. And I don't know to what extent the composer was trying to reflect that mood, but they certainly did it well. And the music really helped me connect what was going on with the Klingons with past encounters with the Klingons. Yeah. And so I thought it was really quite nicely done. So,
I mean, anytime you want to reference Star Trek VI for me, especially the music, I am all for it because that is my favorite soundtrack of the series. I love it.
Right. And people can't see it, but there's a giant Star Trek VI poster there right is. Behind your head.
There is.
Right there. Yeah, yeah. So the other thing that we didn't talk about, we didn't actually talk about the Chimera Blossom very much. I thought it was an interesting choice to make this what they were going for, because beyond being a creature in Greek mythology, the definitions of chimera are an individual organ or part consisting of tissues of diverse genetic constitution. Another is the same thing, individual organ or part containing tissue with two or more genetically distinct populations of cells. And then another one is chimera can be an illusion or a fabrication of the mind, especially about an unrealized dream or aim. Mm. And I thought all three of these fit into the Battelle storyline very well, because we're talking about the human DNA and the Gorn DNA. So we've got the two like genetically right. distinct populations, but also the unrealized dream. It seems unlikely that they're, well, I say that maybe it's a nice, neat way to tie it up that, hey, Spock's going to figure it out. But the idea of being able to cure her, Mbenga presents it as a real long shot. Like, this is her only chance. And so that's where I feel like the choice of Chimera works well, too, is this kind of illusion or unrealized aim of finding a way to save her. So that's just another thing that popped out to me.
Yeah, agreed.
But yeah, so I'm going to give this episode, I think I'll give it 8 Chimera Blossoms.
Fantastic.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Shuttle to Kenfori as well. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcast. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. Of course, you can also send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up, and that'll come right over to us as well. And of course, you can find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not fighting off the living dead, where can people find you?
Chris, I gotta say, it's just exhausting.
There are so many of them. I mean,
there really are. They're never ending. They continue to keep spawning. Please find me all over social media under the name Matt Rushing 02. Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Faro, all of those places you can find me. I guess it's X Twitter now. So anyway, you can also find me here on the network outside all of this great Star Trek talk that you and I do, Chris. You can find me on the 602 Club talking about all of the franchises we love. I mean, this summer we've had so many great blockbusters to talk about, and we're continuing that. In fact, and so check all of those out. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, you'll find me with a couple of shows. One's called Owl Post, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. You'll also find me on Aggressive Negotiations with the great John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. And Chris, when you're not trying to figure out exactly which vitamin is going to help that monster within stay there, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm perusing the aisles right now. Just popping them, popping those vitamins, figure out which one works. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network, as you mentioned, doing all those shows with you. You can also find me in the back catalog on lots of shows, and you can find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. And if you would like to help us keep this show and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next time when we're going to get together for a space adventure hour.
Hit it?